hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, for my program today, I'm going to play most of this week's edition of the Ethnostate, which I'm a host, a weekly regular. Our chief host is William Johnson, the chairman of the American Freedom Party, and our producer is Ken Givenand, and we also have a number of rotating guests this week. Our guests are Pastor Tom Robb of the Christian Revival Center in Harrison, Arkansas, and his daughter Rachel Pendergraft also of Harrison, Arkansas. So this is the Ethnostate. And this is Paul Fromm.
Basically, the article is that Georgia is now considering, or maybe has passed, a resolution to protect Confederate monuments. And frankly, in light of today's beliefs, and I'm shocked that they would even consider such a thing.
Actually, doesn't the law protect just all monuments and all historical landmarks? I don't think it necessarily specifically states Confederate, but I may be mistaken. I obviously haven't read the law.
Well, that could be very well a loophole that they are using in order to protect the Confederate monuments.
But well, right. I mean, obviously.
Go ahead.
I said, obviously, the Confederate monuments was being targeted, but it, as we see, all monuments are being targeted, even Lewis and Clark, a monument being targeted there in Charlottesville, Virginia. And so all monuments that showed any type of historical connection of white people, European, with the building of America, even Joan of Arc monument being attacked down in New Orleans, and she was not even American. So, but Confederate monument is certainly what is driven the forefront here, and if the lawmakers are, I suppose, wise, they understand that, you know, the umbrella has to be all monuments, and of course, Confederate monuments.
Did anybody catch the typo in that article?
No. Well, first of all, tell us what the article is and include what the typo was.
Well, the typo, it says George passes bill to protect Confederate monuments.
George. Well, let George do it, so I guess George is going to do it.
Yeah. Well, if we know you're referring to either one of the Bushes, it would never happen, so that's clearly glaring typo.
Okay. Oh. Apologies for my voice, it's kind of weak tonight, but Georgia legislatures, this is according to Western Journal, Georgia legislators have given final legislative approval to a law that imposes stiffer penalties on those who vandalize public monuments and makes it harder to move existing monuments. And that's pretty much it. Unless you want to get into the editorializing of this, is why are they moving the monuments? It is because they are erasing history. History is a record of the past. Not just written history, but any icon is a history of the past. Well, why do they want to erase our history? I'm guessing because they want to rewrite it. What's my thoughts?
I pointed out quite often in my speeches that the reason they want to rewrite history is because the history of our people is a history of conquest. And the history of the non-whites is a history of submission. And we have always conquered. Every land we've gone to, we have conquered. And like I like to point out, that when we regain a love for our history, we become conquerors again. And that is what they're concerned with.
And also, as the pastor points out, when you study your history, not the rewritten history, but your history, you find out amazing facts. So like, in order to be a citizen of any of the original 13 colonies, you had to be white. And, you know, America was a white country. That by definition, that's why I think they're so busy trying to denigrate or suppress history. So the history, I suppose, is supposed to begin with the so-called Holocaust.
Well, one thing that I think, one of the reasons why a lot of people are opposing these monuments is they're saying, oh, they were not even contemporarily erected. They were erected after the fact. They erected in 1910 or 1920 or something like that. But I mean, that's still not very far away. Long ago, I remember when I would be looking at the YouTube and I'd see these old TV shows like What's My Line or I've Got a Secret or something like that, and they have an old guy that totters out there and he says, oh, when I was a kid, I saw Abraham Lincoln get shot in Ford Theater. And the other one says, oh, I'm, you know, I was a Confederate war veteran. And so even in our life, even during the television era, even when I was alive, you have Confederate people who were still alive and being active. So, of course, you don't erect a monument immediately after you've been defeated. You got to sit on your hands and heels until the radical Republicans go away, and then you can, and the climate changes, and you can start building these monuments. So
I want to point out also that the majority of the Southern monuments were erected by the Daughters of the Confederacy through fundraising and legislative acts that they were able to get passed. And the Daughters of the Confederacy went in and met with school boards. They met with local and state legislators and so forth to look through textbooks and to ensure that the true story of the Southern people were being told to the school children. And they are, the Daughters of Confederacy are credited with the phraseology of the Lost Cause. And so I bring that up because I just want people to acknowledge how important it is for mothers and fathers, for people to instruct their children and to carry the banner of white revival, a love of history, love of their heritage and so forth, into their families. And that if the Southern women could make it such an important factor at that time, so we are still fighting for that today, then mothers and fathers today can carry this banner forward, not just the Southern banner, but the banner of European Western civilization forward into future generations.
Yeah, I want to also add too that immediately after the war between the states, commonly called the Civil War, there certainly was it was before our time, before certainly any of us were alive, so I have to use the word perhaps, because we don't have a first-hand experience on it. There was a lot of hatred and animosity between the North and the South. But after that period ended, even the Northerners began to honor the Southern heroes, I believe, because that's why we have so many Southern heroes statues in what they call Statuary Hall, I believe, in Washington, D.C., right here at our national capital. We have monuments to many of these Southern gentlemen right there in the Northern capital. So I think immediately after the war, of course, it did not exist, but a short time later, they began to honor these men and say, these men were heroes, we fought against them, but they still fought for ideals and principles that we can cherish and appreciate.
Well, that's very true, and that legacy of honoring the South and the Confederate warriors continued on until very recently, and I mentioned this several times before. I've gone to Civil War battle reenactments, and I went to one out in Moore Park maybe, 15 years ago, and at that time, everybody wanted to be a Confederate. They wanted to wear the gray. Nobody wanted to wear the blue. I shouldn't say nobody,
absolutely,
but they could not get enough people to fill the battlefield on the Union side. Everyone wanted to be Confederate. And so it's true, for many, many years, decades, the South and the Confederacy and that battle, we looked upon them as being real patriots, heroes, and now that's totally changed. But one additional point that I want to make is that immediately after the Civil War ended, the radical Republicans that would not have taken charge had Abraham Lincoln lived were so oppressive for the Southerners that many of them, of the men, they said, I got to get out of here. And where did they come? They came to Los Angeles. And Los Angeles at that time, right after the Civil War, was really a Southern state in terms of mentality and population. So much so when you read these old annals about how you became lawyers, you know, you didn't have to take a bar exam, you didn't have to go to law school. What you did, you went before the bar examiners who were all Southern good old boys, and you say, I want to be a lawyer, and I fought in the Georgia 5th Regiment. And they say, oh, okay, you qualify. It's a law line. That happened seven times, and you read the bar committee get together and says, guys, we can't do this. You got to establish higher standards than that. Some of these really old lawyers that practiced for a long time, that's how they were admitted. They were Southern patriots, and they got in that way.
I want to make a comment, too, that you mentioned the Civil War, and I make that phrase also quite often. But in reality, that's a misnomer, because it was not a Civil War. There was no attempt by the Southerners to overthrow the Northern government. They didn't try to replace the Northern government, didn't just try to destroy the legislature, the presidency. They just were fighting for independence. But there was no attempt for the South to actually subdue and destroy the Northern government and take over the entire country. So the phrase Civil War is in
breach many times, and you called it the War of Northern Aggression. So
right.
I know that's where you're coming from. But in any event, there's another issue that we need to talk about, is that they're not just attacking the Civil War, the war between the states, the Confederate monuments. They're attacking so many of our monuments. Like I believe I read recently that is at Temple University, they're going to be taking down Thomas Jefferson. And why, I, you know, I have a variety of reasons.
Virginia State, I think, it brought that up.
You may not like this, but I'm kind of glad. I'd as soon take down Thomas Jefferson's monument if you indeed was messing around with Sally Henning.
Well, I don't believe that's true at all. There are no DNA.
It was his uncle.
Okay.
Right.
Well, whatever. Still,
don't spread that lie.
I've been so prejudiced by Thomas Jefferson with his, cutting out God out of the Bible and messing around with Sally Henning, all that kind of stuff. I might join Antifa and help rip down that statue.
Well, you give me a pass on that.
Okay, all right.
As far as messing around with Sally Henning, I don't. Even the people who at the time said the evidence for that is really very weak.
All right. I apologize. I repent of that statement.
Yeah. We'll consider whether we should forgive you or not.
All right. Okay.
It's not a consideration.
It's often said that we know what happened, Jeff. We know what's happening now, but we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So we kind of need to prognosticate and see how this is going to play out. And so, Paul, I want to ask you this question, and a few others can chime in on this, is what do you see that can be good from this attack on our Confederate monuments? Mm-hmm. How can this play to make things better in the future, if there's anything there?
Well, I think one of the things the attack does is it motivates a pushback. And in doing that, maybe a lot of people will become more aware of their Southern heritage, etc. We're having a somewhat similar thing in Canada. Our first prime minister had a poor view of Chinese and got a lot of the Native Indians into residential schools, and this was considered a form of near genocide by the day standards. So therefore he was a racist, and there have been efforts to change schools that are named after him, to take down his statue. And
what's his name?
Just Sir John A. Macdonald. He was our George Washington.
Okay.
There's been a really good pushback where people have actually started talking about him and about his achievements. I mean, he basically formed a nation out of a couple of isolated British colonies on the East Coast and one British colony across the Rockies on the West Coast. And he built a national railway that tied the country together. He was a huge nation builder. Whatever his views may have been on Chinese were widely held at the time. People didn't want to be overrun by the Chinese. And that was a big sentiment in both Canada and the United States on the West Coast. And what do you do with Stone Age people? You want to bring them into the modern world. You could neglect them. That would be one alternative. The other was to bring them from their wandering tribes to residential schools where they're kept 10 months of the year. Well, today that was considered cultural genocide, racism, all the rest of it. For that reason, we must take down his statues and so on. But in the fact that that there's been a real pushback, a reaction to that, I think that's good because it's helped well-meaning people actually understand a little bit more about our history. So maybe it's a needed kick in the backside to a lot of people to pay more attention to our history, whether it's in Canada or the United States. I never welcome persecution, but maybe if there's a silver lining on this cloud, maybe that's it.
Okay.
Well, if I can make reference to a Bible verse right along that line, it says in Jeremiah, so when my judgments are in the land, the inhabitants of the earth will learn righteousness. So sometimes it takes judgment. It takes push by the enemy for us to become awakened and realize our need to regroup, circle the wagon, so to speak.
And it also serves as a wake up call who maybe have not paid a lot of attention. That what they're facing on the other side, not just the Antifa, but their higher up enablers, is a wrecking crew. They want to wreck European civilization on this continent. And part of the wrecking is to remove all as much memory of as they can, and then they can rebrand it simply as a history of these diabolical racists, the colonialists, and exploiters. But as long as there are monuments, that implicitly says these people must have been good. I mean, Milton Monument was built to.
Well, Pastor Rob, you're quoting that scripture. I think it's really good. And, you know, I wouldn't mind coming out and hearing you preach. When can we come and listen to you preach? Do you have a function coming up?
Well, we do have a function coming up, a Faith and Freedom Conference on April 26th, 27th, 28th. And they can find out more information about that by going to altrighttv.com. And this is a family event, and we are secluded, rural area. We have very friendly neighbors and friendly people in the community and friendly law enforcement. So people come here, relax, bring their families. That's what we try to emphasize, that this is a place we can actually bring your family. We're fighting for the family, but also we understand the family is fighting for the family also is fighting to preserve itself and our heritage of Western civilization. So we try to make it very friendly for the family. So April 26th, 27th, and they can go to altrighttv.com and find out more information. But then I also want to add that each Sunday at 12 o'clock Central, excuse me, Eastern Time, which has to be adjusted to wherever they live at their own time zone, we broadcast the live video stream of our Sunday morning church service at the Christian Revival Center.
So that Faith and Freedom Conference is a wonderful event. Not only is the price right, the food great, the speakers are fantastic, the music fantastic, but you leave it spiritually and emotionally recharged. I loved all the time that there, and I long for the time I'll be able to return. But
I hope you can return soon.
Pardon?
We hope you can return soon and hope you get that situation. You're being persecuted with resolve. But thank you very much for the comments, Paul.
About persecution. I have another item I'd like to add.
Okay. I do want to say that our live video stream of Sunday morning is found at Christian Revival Center. That's christianrevivalcenter.net.
Okay. Before we leave this Confederate statue issue that I need to bring up, because I think it shows how deeply influenced our society is by what happened 150 years ago. I mean, Civil War has been over for 150 years, but even now, some of the events that took place there are abhorrent and still cause a heartache to a lot of people. And in the past, I've mentioned this several times, and I probably shouldn't, and I should have apologized for it, but people have told me, they've asked me, Johnson, who's your favorite actor? And I thought a moment, I said, John Wilkes Booth. And they were abhorred that I would say that. And they were angry, and this was 150 years after time. And I was just joking. They still were hurt. And if I remember right, John Wilkes Booth was the most famous actor ever. And as soon as he was, he killed the President Lincoln, everybody destroyed all of their paraphernalia because they didn't want to be tied up with him. They're afraid they're going to be rounded up and hanged just like all of them were.
Well, John Wilkes Booth had been suspected was a member of agent of the Rothschilds who needed to liquidate Abraham Lincoln because he was the first president in American, from the founding of the country, he was the first and only president who issued constitutional money called the Lincoln Greenbacks, but bypassed the bankers. And whenever you go past the bankers, you're going to make the bankers upset. So Abraham Lincoln, understanding that the Constitution required that the only agency that is able to print our money was the Congress, but we had always allowed our money to be printed by the banks. Andrew Jackson fought against the bank quite a bit when he was president and created a lot of anger and hostility among the swamp at his time. And then Lincoln became president, and he issued the Lincoln Greenbacks, which was interest-free money. You didn't have to pay interest on it. And the bankers didn't like that. As people suspected, John Wilkes Booth was an agent of the Rothschilds. And I think actually Danny Carr, I believe, maybe William Carr rather, in his book, Pawns in the Game, I think actually makes reference to that possibility and other evidence suggesting that he was an agent of the Rothschilds.
Okay. This is the second thing I apologize for. I won't make that joke again. but it was interesting. I was looking at, I wanted to watch a play, and so I thought, well, you know, why don't I watch Our American Cousin? Because I thought that was the play that Lincoln was. watching it, and I watched it, and it didn't go over very well. It was one of those extreme, you know, just farce type plays, and it was kind of interesting. But what I thought was interesting is that John Wilkes Booth timed the shooting to right when the loudest laughter. He knew that in the third act, in the second movement, there was going to be great laughter because he was familiar with the play. And it was a very popular play all around Europe and America. And he knew where the most laughter would come, so he could shoot them without hearing the gun. And it was during the third movement, the second act, and this is the sentence that got the most laughs. And it'll show how dated our humor is, or it was back then. And this is what was quoted. Don't know the manners of good society, eh? Well, I guess I know enough to turn you inside out, old gal. You sock-doodleizing old man-trap. That was the funniest sentence in that play. Everybody laughed like crazy.
Humor has changed. Humor has changed.
One point that you need to make is that they were making fun of a woman. They say, you old man-trap. They were making light of a woman. Feminists would get all upset, and not only that, the comedians would get upset because that's the least funniest sentence I've ever read.
What is a sock doodle?
I was going to ask the same thing. What's a sock doodle?
Well, it's actually not sock doodle. Just a moment. Let me pull it up again. It is sock doodleizing. I looked it up, and they said we don't know. I don't know.
I'm gonna say that it probably has something to do with her breasts.
Oh, well, I don't know if they would make those jokes back then, but maybe. All right.
I will promise to look it up in Mencken's History of the English Language for next week.
Okay, sounds good. All right, well, let's go down to the next article that Ken brought up. It's Facebook cracks down on white nationalism, saying it's the same as white supremacy. Since I don't do Facebook, that doesn't really affect me, I don't think. But Ken, give us the skinny on this article.
Well, the skinny on this article is, I'm pulling it up here so folks at home can see it while we talk about it, that Facebook has decided that white nationalism and white supremacy are basically synonymous. The reason they're doing this, I'm assuming, is because the term white supremacy has been sufficiently demonized. But it seems like white nationalism is actually catching on. That it's being normalized, that it's being legitimized, that a lot of people are being attracted to it.
Well, that's so, probably because Donald Trump being president and him being labeled constantly as a white nationalist, the population of the country are saying to themselves, I guess white nationalism is okay, and I guess I can be one without, I guess I can be one because the president is.
Well, if you're white, and if you're a nationalist, which probably 99% of white people are, they're white nationalists. They just don't know it. So right. The objective, I think, is to demonize the term so nobody figures it out. Oh, hey, we're white nationalists.
Yeah.
The point that you made there is true in that it used to be people wouldn't know, particularly interviewers and journalists wouldn't make a distinction between white nationalists, white supremacists, white separatists. And I would often school the journalists saying, look, calling someone a white supremacist is really a slur word equivalent to using the N-word because it's even worse because you're turning the entire world against that person by saying, oh, thinking he's better than everybody else. And so you need to call us white nationalists. And the journalists were, to a man, very supportive of that concept. And the only time it would come up where, say, white supremacists is the people who write the article titles, the bylines. They'd all put it there because they would attract more readers. But it is true, the term white nationalist was becoming accepted, and white supremacist was really not being used very much anymore. So I think that Mark Zuckerberg and some of these others decided to do that. Well, we want to lump them all together to demonize everybody who supports Western civilization.
I think we're missing the point here. any ideology, in my opinion, should have a right to express itself, whatever it is, white supremacism, whatever that is, white separatism, white nationalism. How dare that upstart Zuckerberg censor free men and women? I mean, to me, that's the outrage. And that's why Trump's echoed this to some extent. We have got to find ways to break up these near monopolies like Facebook and YouTube and Google and so on. They must be, if they're going to be as they are, they must be treated as public utilities and compelled to serve every subscriber or every member. You know, how dare they do this? And I've seen the official explanation. Well, white supremacy, there isn't much difference between that and white nationalism, and that leads to terrorism. Hold on. White nationalism, wanting to support and promote your own people, leads to terrorism? You know, in one crack cocaine den, is that reality? We are dealing with the ugly face of the international you-know-what censors. And there's got to be pushback. I mean, I think people should be rioting over this.
Yeah, that is the argument that I think is being taken up by Congress now. Is a social media equivalent to a utility? And if so, I mean, what happens if I owned a little water company and it's a nonprofit, but it's not publicly owned? I own the water company and I serve a community, and I say, I'm not going to serve this family because they're mixed race, so you're not going to get water. Sorry, you need to go get a water truck and bring it in on your own. I would go to jail for that. Pardon me?
If you did that legally, you'd have your rear end handed to you, and probably rightly
so. Sure.
They should not be allowed. Facebook and these other tyrannies should not be allowed to do what they're doing.
They're going under the guise that they have the right as private enterprise to discriminate against political speech, because political speech itself has no guarantees of rights in this country. However, religious expression does. And that's where I think we really need to push our efforts towards, because it's not just white nationalism as political thought, but for the most part, adherence to white nationalism or white patriotism or whatever you want to call it, most of them are Christians, and they have a deeply held religious belief of a nuclear family that stems from Christianity, of no same-sex marriage that stems from Christianity, of kind after kind that stems from Christianity, and all these different things, whether people realize or not, stems from Christianity. So what they are doing, in fact, is discriminating against my and our religious beliefs. And that has been something that has been upheld by the courts as not allowable by any private enterprise.
Yeah, but the flip side of this is, are we going to have unintended consequences? I mean, good intentions, but bad results. Just like in the 1960s, we had good intentions to let other races come in, and they are destructive to us. Now, I want to bring up an example. Take a look what's happened in New Zealand. In New Zealand, it is a government mandate regarding social media. And they say that if you distribute the Shooter's Manifesto, you can go to jail for 15 years. I mean, it's possible that a regular shooter wouldn't be in prison for 15 years in New Zealand. But if you distribute that manifesto, it is. And that's a heavy hand of government. So
is that to distribute the manifesto, which I have done, or distribute the video or the selfie video we took that shows a lot of the shootings?
Oh, I don't know. Good, whatever. I'm just
shooting.
I'm fast and loose with my facts, as you probably can appreciate. But the point is that the alternative would be to create our own Facebook, our own Google, our own Twitter, or, you know, whatever these things are, and then not have government interference, but then have it hugely successful. And of course, if we change the mindset of society, then we can do all that. So, I don't know.
Or get money.
Yeah. Whatever.
One thing on the positive side, we've had numerous reporters contact us here, you know, since that decision by Facebook was placed down. They said, you know, well, since you're not able to utilize Facebook anymore, are you going to start having rallies and this and that? And of course, you know, we haven't really utilized Facebook that much anyway. We have, you know, a nationwide membership and newspapers, and we kind of organize differently than the kind of the old mentality of going out and having a rally. But nevertheless, with Facebook and some of these social media outlets trying to restrict access to white nationalists, what it is going to do is going to put sort of a taboo type feature upon white nationalists. And from my experience, that just makes people want to find out what you have to say all the more. So the more they try to censor you, the more young people especially want to find out what you have to say. What are your beliefs? What do you have to say about different things? And so I always look for the positive and thing that happens, and that's kind of my spin on it.
Yeah, I completely agree with Rachel. Young people are a lot more sophisticated than, well, I think probably everybody on this panel in finding things. And I'm meeting so many people under 35 who are self-educated, and they know a lot of stuff. It's very, very encouraging. And there are alternatives being developed to Facebook and so on. There's alternative Twitter, and that's Gab. There's an alternative search engine to Google, which is, I think, DuckDuckGo. There's BitChute, that's an alternative to YouTube. Now, they're not as popular yet. But we've got to use our, you know, European ingenuity.
One of the social media things, sites that a lot of people are using that I'm familiar with is VK, which is a Russian-based social media page. Works similar to Facebook, and I don't see them doing any restriction. They may at some point.
That's where all the collusion came from.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But be like Victor, and then K, VK. Just BK.com. I don't get paid anything, any royalties for suggesting people to be paid. Yeah. But they might check that out.
But see, Facebook is so entrenched, it really is indeed like a utility. About 2 weeks ago, I got all sorts of these letters from the Los Angeles Department, Fire Department, because I own a bunch of properties, and you're supposed to do brush clearance. And they said, we're no longer going to mail you any sort of affidavits, nothing going to go through the mail, you got to do it online. So I go online, and they say, well, if you sign up through Facebook, you do it this way. And I thought, Facebook, that, you know, that makes, to go to the LA Fire Department, you go through Facebook. And so we really are in an uphill battle trying to battle things like that, because if I tell the LA Fire Department, I don't want to go through Facebook, I want to go through VK, you know, they're going to not know what I'm talking about, and they'll just hang up.
They're opening themselves up, and, you know, the Bible says that, you know, God's people will use the tools of the enemy against them. And so I think that, you know, all these different things that the enemy tries and pulls out of their hat against our people, I think ultimately it's going to be turned right back against them.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether they want to try to censor us and keep us out or so forth, you know, it's going to backfire on them ultimately.
Okay. All right. I think we've exhausted this topic, so I'd like to move to another topic. The one that I'd like to talk about next is the mother of all migrant caravans heading our way. So what's that all about, Ken?
This story is about a massive invasion of the United States by people who live south of the border. The term mother of all caravans was apparently coined by an official in Mexico, a member of the Mexican government. So the story is that an invasion force of about 20,000 aliens, they call them migrants, they call them invaders, about 20,000 is being formed to invade the United States. Now, quick editorial. I think the strategy the globalists are using is what I call the Gandhi strategy. It was also used by Martin Luther King. And the idea is you just overwhelm authorities with sheer numbers of people. And of course, the Democrats on the other side are fighting to keep fighting Donald Trump to prevent him from having adequate resources to put a stop to these people, a stop to the invasion. So they're just overwhelming American authorities with numbers.
And you know, what your challenge doing the Gandhi strategy and the Martin Luther King strategy is your is you know. Or you hope, you know, that your white opponent is not going to shoot. That if you nonviolently surge across a bridge, let's say, or, you know, surge into the United States, but you're not going to be met with a hail of bullets.
Well, it's more than that. It's putting women and children at the front and playing the sympathy card.
Yeah.
That's the real tool. It's not just the sheer numbers, it's the fact of the demographics of who they put out front. And they're playing on the sympathies of people who are naturally compassionate people.
And that's why Trump is so right, and why Viktor Orban was too a couple of years ago. You build a wall. You don't let them back to you. You don't let them push their women and children front first, across open territory where you can't shoot them and all that. You build a wall where they can't get over it. And I really admire Orban in Hungary. He built this huge fence, and if they try to clamber over, he's got the gendarmes that'll whack them or the tear gas them or whatever. I mean, but you make it quite clear you're not getting in, and you try to avoid the situation where they can play the bleeding heart card.
Well, in the late 70s, maybe early 80s, Dr. Ed Field, in the issue of the Thunderbolt, which was called at that time, and I've got a copy, actually, I probably reach over and grab it within about a half a minute, but he actually had a whole front page article, Build the American Wall, and he did a diagram of what the wall would look like, Build the American Wall. And so Dr. Field was proposing the wall. Other white nationalists began at the time was also, so for Donald Trump talking about building the wall, they're right. He got that for the white nationalists in this country, the white extremists.
Well, I was talking to some sort of political wag recently, and he was saying, you know, Johnson, the white people, they have been so demoralized, they cannot run their own countries anymore. They're just running it into a ground because of their misplaced compassion. It says, we need to have China take over and run America, because what would happen then if you had this mother of all migrant surge coming across and the Chinese were in control of your white country? What would they do? They'd shoot them, and then people would turn back.
If the Chinese were in control, you wouldn't have a white country.
But I'm just saying, this is what this guy said. He said, let the Chinese control it, because when the Mexicans try to come over, they'll shoot them all, and they'll go back. And then they'll say, they'll keep the white people, because we need to have the innovation. Keep wanting the innovation so that you can, they give you all the innovation and they can build things.
What if we just give the Chinese?
He's insane.
What if we just give the Chinese the border states?
But that was what he said. But in any event, as an aside, I want to talk about issues that are that I think will be close to Paul Frum's heart, because they're linguistic issues. And the title of this is The Mother of All Migrant Caravans Are Heading This Way. So, Paul, where did they start coming up with the mother of, using the term the mother of all? That's a fairly recent
Saddam Hussein, I think, sir.
I believe Saddam Hussein said it, and perhaps it has an additional meaning in Arabic. I don't know, but I back to the pastor says to Saddam Hussein.
But don't you hear this phrase using more and more? Yeah. Mother of this, mother of that? And so, and that's
especially
not...
Especially if you're in the ghetto.
But that's not the only word. Like, I remember when I was living in Japan many years ago, they would call a personal computer MyCom. You know, my being the English my for mine, and com computer, MyCom. Now, that's a stupid portmanteau. But then you come back here, and America, and there's MySpace, and you have various schools. You have, my educational program. My is a prefix now that's used for a lot of different things, and it came from the Japanese use their embrace of English. So notice how a lot of our language that we're embracing these things come from other countries. And another one, for example, I was just, a very popular site now is called GoDaddy. I think that's where you recognize, where you register your websites. And I thought, GoDaddy, that's the stupidest name I ever heard. And then on the way back from the DMV today, where I'm wax nostalgic, I saw a sign that said Kebab Daddy. And so, I thought, everything, we're just embracing all of these new linguistic terms that I think that Merriam-Webster is going to have a job for a long time because of the
And in the ghetto, it's who's your daddy? I think there's a TV program too on TV for a while, trying to figure out who, they bring women on there with babies and they had to determine who the daddy was.
Is that why they call people from Indiana Hoosiers?
But talking about how other cultures handle things, it may be the whites are too demoralized to defend themselves, and the Chinese certainly wouldn't hesitate to repeat Tiananmen Square if they had to. But I had to marvel. There was some big name, I think, rap star in your town, Bill, who died, was killed, shot, and they had a memorial for him yesterday, and they couldn't even run a memorial right. It broke out in mass gunfire, and 19 people were trampled. They thought, what sort of culture can't even run a memorial?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that we as the white people get fewer and fewer in numbers, and the third world get more and more, we just won't be competitive. I mean, if you look at the IQ of all of these other countries that have IQs higher than Western civilization, it's all of the Asian countries, Northern Asian countries, that don't have any immigration. So I think if we had our own country, we could elevate our society, we could correct our problems, we'd still have problems, but we could deal with them. We can't deal with them in a multicultural society. And I think we could probably be able to eat what we want. And so that brings us into the next topic, Ken. What's that all about?
Well, we got a couple more topics here if we can get to them, but this one's
about white people eating wrong.
This is about
drinking too much water.
Yeah, the problem is that white people are to blame for global warming. Of course, now they call it climate change, but the reason is because of our diet. And when I first read the story, the thought that came to my mind is these people are getting to be desperate. They got to find something to pin on white people, so they say, well, their habits are destroying the environment. But here's what the New York Post.com said. Caucasian populations are disproportionately contributing to climate change through their eating habits, which uses up more food, which, by the way, we invented, that emits more greenhouse gases than the typical diets of Black and Latinx, which is a politically correct term. I don't know if you know that or not. Latinx is gender neutral. It's not Latino. It's not Latina. It's Latinx. Communities, according to a new report published in the Journal of Industrial Ecology.
Okay, first point is that the plastic in the ocean, I read that 90% comes from third world garbage. The people that have been husbanding this world more than anyone else are the white people. And our food, I mean, maybe the Africans, because they only eat bugs, maybe they don't have such an impact globally. But we are the ones that husband the world. What do they say about our diet that is causing climate change? In particular?
For example, they say that the Caucasian diet requires more water. But as I read through this article, I really don't see any connection.
It is the Asians that are stripping the oceans of fish by using these gill nets that stretch for miles. And, you're going to tell me that fish don't require water? It is the Asians that are destroying this environment.
Well, interestingly, in the article that Ken was referring to, three of the main food items that Caucasians eat more than other races, according to the study, is beef, milk, and apples.
And beans,
and so or potatoes. And so those things, they say, take more water. However, Caucasian people, the study found, actually use less land in their food production than non-white people do.
Yeah, you know, this is the...
some ingenuity on our part, I believe.
I agree with that. This is utterly irrational guilt-mongering. I thought what it was going to be is that the Caucasian diet requires a lot more animals, like for milk and for meat. And the animals create methane gas through their farting, etc., and so on. But none of this makes sense because it's not the carbon dioxide that is causing climate change. There's nothing we can do about climate change. It's sunspots or explosions on the sun. When there are a lot, its temperature heats up. When there are fewer, it cools down. And we've had heating and cooling going on for many centuries, long before we got anywhere near hydrocarbons. This is utterly scientific nonsense. And Trump has formed an environmental advisory committee with some very prominent scholars, some of the very few who've had the courage to oppose what had become almost mainstream ideology.
I take a different view on that. I believe that climate change and global warming is real, but even if it's not, I think to husband the land more and use less is a good thing. In fact, I'm all for, let's get rid of Monsanto, let's get rid of nitrate fertilizer, let's get rid of pesticides, and let's see how world production of food goes down. It's going to go down dramatically. That's fine with me, because my kids are going to have plenty to eat, my grandkids will have plenty to eat, we'll find a way, we'll eat. If we cut back all the nitrate fertilizers, and we can no longer feed all these people, and the pesticides are done away with, that is good for society, because then there'll be mass famine, and the people that die aren't going to be my kids, I can tell you that.
But it's not climate change that is bogus. You can't lose on climate change. The climate is always changing, either getting warmer or getting colder. It's the fact that man can cause that, and we can't. The most you can do, honestly, if you want the climate to warm up or to cool down, is get on your knees and pray to God, because nothing you do can do otherwise is going to do a thing.
I think, too, that our people, being the leaders of technology and advancement, probably as they do advance and do create technology, and they do probably do create some problem that affects the climate. I think that's quite possible. But at the same token, when we recognize what we've done, we come then correct it. I think white people always corrected. White people made mistakes over the years. We've already corrected them. We have the capability of creating the problem. We have the capability of correcting the problem. And where the rest of the world haven't corrected their problems, like you say, the Asian countries are, you know, more plastic waste is coming from China than America. And so they're not going to correct the problem by eliminating and destroying the white technology. The problem only increases and get worse.
We have something to do with pollution. That's absolutely true. And we were not very good stewards.
Sure, we dumped stuff into water and so on, but anybody cleaned it up.
Yeah, we cleaned it up. I mean, in the 70s, the Cuyahoga River going through Cleveland caught fire, was so polluted.
And I remember that. And also, the Los Angeles, if you took a look at Los Angeles weather and climate in the 1940s, it was just terribly smoggy. And we have, through catalytic converters and other functions, made our air really beautiful. It's really a non-smoggy area now because of what we've done. But nevertheless, I still think you can't go wrong by being overly concerned with the environment. Are you guys familiar with Pascal's wager? Some of you religious people might be. It's kind of like Pascal was saying, well, I don't know whether God lives or whether but if you live a godly life, in the next life, if there is a God, then you're going to be blessed. If there is no God, Still, you've lived a good life, and that's better. So I think that whether climate change is real or is not real, if we act as if it's real, it's kind of like Pascal's Rager, and it's a good thing. So I'm all for supporting the lefties who say we gotta support climate change. Well, and then am I gonna have to apologize for the third time? That's what I believe.
Well, I think all of us believe in a wholesome environment. I don't think anybody wants to pollute the planet.
I was gonna say on our nice party platform, we have had for 30 years the pursuit of renewable energy as part of our 30-point platform. And so it's very desirable, as everyone on the panel has suggested, that we work to not only protect our environment, but also to advance it, for our children. I think what a lot of people object to are people like Cortez, who uses the Green New Deal and environmental terror tactics as a way to oppress white people. And so white people are brought into it, not as innovators of clean technology, not as people who can help better the environment or find unique ways of farming or agriculture and things such as that, but as the boogeyman who somehow is the oppressor of all the noble savages of the world.
And somebody in the chat group has a question. They want to know why India stinks.
I've never been there.
I think you got a curry.
Yeah,
it's probably the same reason the motels run by Indian smell. When you walk through a front door of a motel run by an East Indian, you can smell the curry powder and it stinks. So
I like the curry powder.
All right.
I quite a bit. But I think if the question is legitimate, just from my own study, it has to do with the pollution and the fact that they have no legislation against deprecating in the streets or the rivers.
Yeah, it could be. To get back to the point that you made, Rachel, is that I do believe that like there are people are pay lip service to the environmentalmen, and maybe lip service by Mrs. Cortez in order to go after us, but there's also lip service on our side. Everyone says, "Oh yeah, we support the environment," but I met with John McCain, 15 years ago, and my wife and I were there, and we talked to him. I said, Senator McCain, we are opposed to illegal immigration. We need to take a stance against it. And he was just so open borders, and he said to me, well, I want you to know that I'm against illegal immigration too, strongly, And I thought, that's stupid. And so there's people that'll give lip service to opposing illegal immigration, and there's people that'll give lip service to saving the environment, and so I think we really truly not need to save the environment. So when I'm done with this meeting, I'm going to helicopter back to my house, and I'm going to work on saving the environment.
In answer to the questioner about why India stinks, they use their rivers as toilets, and there's open defecation in the streets, even in Tony areas. The son of one of the former leaders of the CFC's Conservative Citizens travels the world, and he passed on the story of being taken by a client to a really Tony restaurant in Bombay, and as they were entered just before they got to the door of the restaurant, that there was a beggar squatted down there, and he left a pile of unsavory stuff right where my friend's son was about to put his shoe. And that's the way life is. Well,
sounds like San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, actually, about 10 years ago, I was invited to go to the Philippines, where I was given an award at the Philippine Congress by the Assistant Speaker of the House. And they put this up, they put me up in the most fabulous resort in Manila, and it was owned, it was owned by them with the money that I don't know where they came from. But it was just a beautiful resort overlooking the ocean. And I looked out my window and I looked out, and you couldn't see the water. It was just filled with floating plastic as far as the eye could see. And you could see scows coming through and scooping some of it up. They couldn't even make a dent. So the most beautiful, pristine resort was not pristine at all. the building was nice, but everything stank. So, you know, they need to stop criticizing Western civilization for what we eat, and we need to start, you know, bringing the rest of the world in line. Okay, so we need to wrap this up. And so, Pastor Rob, can you give us one more time this upcoming conference that you have so that we can know about it?
Well, I gave it last time, and let Rachel give it this time.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's the National Faith and Freedom Conference, April 26th, 27th, and 28th at the Christian Revival Center in Harrison, Arkansas. We've got folks registering from the West Coast to the East Coast, North and South. Got a really good, robust attendance registered so far. And we're going to have some fabulous speakers, lots of great music, food prepared on the grounds by fellow white patriots. And there's about 100 acres there groomed. Playground, lots of great places for people to camp, bring their families. You're just going to have a really fantastic time. The weather is going to be gorgeous.
Is there going to be much plastic in the creeks?
There will be no plastic in the creeks. We have a very green, beautiful area here.
Okay. Yeah. Alt-right. There's a need to go to altrighttv.com. Check it out.
All right. This has been an energetic conversation. So we'll see you guys all next week. Goodbye.
The words are enshrined in American culture, and there's no doubt the refugees fleeing war in Syria are tired and poor. But do they truly yearn to breathe free?
Are they coming because they want to be a part of republicanism, part of the American spirit? No.
What happened in Europe is nothing but a preview as to what's coming to the United States.
Witness the disturbing trend of rape gangs ruling the streets of Germany.
They look at European girls as asking for it.
I think that many of these young males view Western women essentially as the spoils of war.
This is Germany's experience with immigrants who refuse to assimilate. That's spreading throughout Europe.
Why? Because Islamic law is against assimilation.
And it's already playing out in the United States.
They come to Europe, and they're coming to America, and they see all these women who are not veiled and who are infidels. They're fair game.
In America, we're starting to see sexual assaults, rapes, honor killing, and it's going to be here to stay.
Thanks to policies launched by the pro-mass immigration leftists who are more concerned about their image than the safety of hard-working Americans.
In pursuit of this globalist agenda, they're running roughshod over the will of the people, inundating our countries with these migrants who have this supremacist, violent, and authoritarian worldview, who are victimizing our young people.
And they're doing it with the support of big businesses, taking advantage of taxpayers for cheap labor.
Social transformation without representation. The people never voted for this.
The Sharia and democracy are completely incompatible. There's no compatibility because the Sharia believes that Western democratic system has to be overthrown.
Scared yet? You should be, because the problems in Europe are coming to America.
Michelle Malkin investigates. Now, here's Michelle Malkin.
It's one of the biggest horror stories that so-called mainstream journalists don't want to talk about, because those who do are branded bigots, racists, and Islamophobes. But whether it's on the front pages of America's leading newspapers or not, it's happening and it's real. Migrants from the Middle East and Northern Africa, swarming into Europe by the millions, are draining social services, committing crimes, and changing the culture. I'm a child of legal immigrants, but I'm against open borders and indiscriminate immigration. The latest waves of Muslim refugees aren't assimilating. They're forming their own isolated communities, and many are importing radical Muslim culture and practices. A lot of these ideas might have been acceptable where they came from, but are not in any way in the Western world, especially the way they treat women as property and second-class citizens. But the Euro-socialists say, just give them time, education, and programs. Well, how's that working for you, Europe? Western women and children are routinely sexually assaulted at public pools, parks, cemeteries, even music festivals. Sound unbelievable? It's not, although you don't hear about it because the mainstream media is covering it up. But one scholar, Soren Kern, is tracking and compiling local news and police reports of these terrifying incidents.
Just recently there was a case of a mother who was walking her daughter in a park during the middle of the day, and two migrants ambushed her from behind, and they took turns raping her, and the migrants held the girl and forced her to watch while these two men were raping her own mother. In Dusseldorf, of a 19-year-old Moroccan who raped a 90-year-old woman who was coming out of a mass in a cathedral in downtown Dusseldorf during the middle of the day, German media would refer to these people as dark-skinned people, or southerners, or southlander. There are many different words, politically correct euphemisms, that German media uses as a way to not use the words Muslim migrant or Middle Eastern migrant.
In what world is this acceptable? The perpetrators are not native. They were not raised with Western values. Yet European politicians knowingly brought these problems across the border, and look what's happened. America, let this be a warning. If we stay the course with mass refugee resettlement, this is only a preview of what's to come.
Across the world, colleagues, family, and friends gather, party, and cheer as they celebrate and ring in the new year together. But in Cologne, Germany, that party turned into a nightmare in 2016. At first, German officials said nothing, but eventually there were so many reports, so many cell phone videos, that they couldn't cover it up any longer. Cologne Mayor Henriette Recker addresses it 1 year later.
Natürlich auch immer